to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are in the second hour of Thursday's show, and I have been joined in the first hour and will continue to be joined in the second hour by my friend, lawyer, advocate, activist, speaker, dreamer, Isioma Wabuzer. This has been so fun so far. And now the next topic we were going to jump into is a big one. It's a topical one. I don't really know where we're going to go with it, but we're just going to start into it, because the talking point everything right now you hear about is inflation. You not only hear about it, you feel it. So it is very much more than a political football, because everyone is experiencing it. They're experiencing it in different ways. I think there's been different cutting of data to see, based on if you drive, if you commute, your race, your kids, your, like, because the spike in price depending on what product or industry you're talking about, that some people are certainly feeling it way more than others. But I think from a political standpoint, which is a lot of times how I end up talking and thinking through things, because I love and consume so much about politics, is what does this mean for the Democrats? What does this mean for Republicans? What does this mean for the midterms? Which is, you know, elections have ramifications, and so that is not not worth talking about. But in reality, it actually is hurting so many people. After we saw people having the opportunity to get wage increases and new jobs, and there's, you know, across the country, but specifically in Wisconsin, there's a labor shortage. So at one point there was this wave of everyone kind of doing better in their paychecks. Mm-hmm. But now that percentage increase in paychecks has not kept pace with inflation, which exactly. Now is at
9.1%.
So, I'm just going to leave it there, and I'm going to let you just comment, and then we'll take it from, I'll react to whatever you say.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. So I have a friend on the East Coast, and she was a graduate student 8 years ago at UMass, was getting a graduate salary. I think she was getting $28,000, and she was just talking on Instagram yesterday how her two-bedroom apartment was $900 a month, and she was struggling. And today, the graduate salary at UMass is $32,000, around that. And that same apartment with no renovations, no upgrades, starts at $1,950 a month, right? And so, to your point, wages are not keeping pace with the standard of living and how much it costs to live. I was just watching Good Morning America and looking at CNN and all of these pundits and articles, and even basic groceries, right? They're more than they've been since 1981. Eggs are up 33%. Chicken is up 18.6%. Milk is up 16.4%. And all of that to say that even the most comfortable of us, right? Like, let's be honest, I'm a lawyer, I'm privileged, I'm solidly middle class, right? If not upper middle class. Life is uncomfortable for me. Mm-hmm. And so when I think of these things, and when I think of inflation, if I'm uncomfortable, how are the most marginalized amongst us? How do they feel? And as we're looking ahead to November and all of these upcoming local elections and federal and national elections, this is something you have to keep in mind, right? And people are different from an economic perspective. I think at least the African-American community takes economic advantage or disadvantage a lot more seriously than other demographics might right now. So it's something to stay on top of mind.
And that's been proven. I mean, there was a headline out of CNN today that they've been actually looking into it, and it's Black and Hispanic Americans are getting hit harder by inflation. And it goes into, exactly. I mean, but it's also like we said, isn't that just always the case?
Right.
Whether it was COVID, whether it's inflation, whether it's just the most vulnerable populations are usually in poverty or have higher rates of poverty already, which shockingly, that's sarcasm, overlaps with Black and brown people.
Exactly. And I think that's the particular nuance with inflation, right? Because we're obviously, yes, whoop-de-doo, it's no surprise. We are always impacted more by certain issues. And by we, I mean Black and brown communities. but that's typically galvanized, and that's typically the case because of our financial and socioeconomic status, right? And so when you're talking about inflation, what is the solution to making sure that these marginalized communities have some sort of economic empowerment while fielding this chaotic time we're living? Because, you know, the threat of the recession is not disappearing. I think the euro and the dollar just reached parity for the first time in 20 years today, right? Today or yesterday, sometime this week. And so that's what I want to hear candidates talking about. When we're talking about who's going to be senator, when we're talking about, that's what I want to hear.
And it's interesting because at least from what I'm hearing, there's a lot of finger pointing, but there's not what is the actual solution? Because the Fed is probably going to raise interest rates again. But the part that I feel like more left-leaning media outlets or certain substacks like Robert Reich and stuff, who is constantly talking about corporate greed and where we are with antitrust laws and the accumulation of, there's a very few companies that own almost everything. And so when we talk about prices at the grocery store, there is a lot of different brands you can buy, but those all fall under about four different companies.
Yeah, you got Unilever. Unilever owns everything as far as I'm concerned.
Unilever does own a lot. But it's like the appearance of competition, but there isn't, right? And so I always don't know who to trust as far as what is actual costs getting pushed on to consumers because of supply chain and real, you know, real cost to the business that is causing prices to go up versus big corporations that do not have the pressure to keep their prices competitive because they own everything.
Right.
And so their ability to just price gouge.
Exactly. And I think that's the scary part, because even the most learned of us can't understand why things are so expensive. And, you know, I can't help but to think, and again, this is not my I'm not an economist by any means. I don't, you know, I'm not a subject matter expert here, but I can't help but to think, coming out of this sort of COVID era, right, and dealing with our post-COVID reality, I can't help but to think corporations just want to recoup any losses they may have experienced over the course of the last 2 years.
Well, and that's certainly the case you can make with gas companies, right, is because they did lose so much money in 2020. There was multiple refineries that were closed, and so you can't just turn those back on easily. And so I had someone make that argument to me as far as the I don't even know what the name of the bill was, but the bill that was proposed in Congress to stop gas companies from price gouging. And there is an argument as far as you know, it's a dangerous game to play to try to limit how much windfall gains an industry can make, because you adjust for incentives. And the example was given to me is in this situation right now of a potential grain shortage globally because of the war in Ukraine and Russia, and how much of the world's grain supply and wheat supply that they provide and are not right now, that there is a potential for American farmers to really, you know, have a windfall gain because they are going to try to, you know, supply what is missing. Mm-hmm. And are you going to limit how much they can profit from that? Are you going to, how do you stand on that leg of we're going to American farmers, we're going to hamstring, right? It's a lot easier to finger point at gas companies, but it is kind of the same logic. And so I totally would admit that it's maybe more complicated and above my pay grade, but it does feel like there's continues to be certain, you know, when you hear numbers of record profits, mm-hmm. that it's just passing the cost on whilst not feeling any of the pain. That the corporations aren't feeling any of the pain. It's the small businesses, it's consumers, and it's specifically people who are working class and in around or below the poverty line.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, your point about, you know, for instance, the wheat and grain example reiterates the need for politicians running in various races throughout Wisconsin to sort of share their piece, right, and what they presume to be a solution to this. Because, you know, we can't neglect that so many Wisconsinites are farmers, right? And there's so much farming, and that's how they sustain themselves. And so what does this look like going ahead? I know President Biden has proposed the gas tax holiday. I don't know if that's, you know, official or what's to come from that. But we absolutely can't ignore that life is getting increasingly expensive. Like, it is insane. Like, I'm afraid to go to the grocery store, right? And like I say, again, not to, you know, to my own horn, but I'm solidly middle class. Yeah. Why? Yeah. These are basic necessities we're talking about.
And I had the same since starting the radio show. Prior to this, I didn't have a large commute. Like, where I live in Milwaukee, when I was at WTMJ, it wasn't that far of a drive. Going to Journal Sentinel, not that far of a drive. But now I'm driving to Waukesha every day. And that is a hit, right? That is 36 minutes each way. And I've certainly noticed, and thank God gas prices are coming down a little bit than where they were. Right. I mean, they're below $5 again. And I'm similar as you, right? Like, I am solidly middle class. I make a decent enough wage that it is not, and I don't have children to feed. I only recently now have a mortgage, but that doesn't even kick in until next month because we just bought our house.
Congratulations.
So my overhead has been not that intense. But I can totally understand the privilege I have of that combination of my income and lack of expenses that I'm responsible for. And so for you, does this change how you vote?
That's a good question. I haven't. So, full transparency, I can't vote. So
that's true. If you could vote.
If I could vote, just, you know, I don't want anyone, you know, taking me to prison or anything.
And in these times, you do have to specify. Trust me, I'm not voting illegally, but if I could, exactly, as an informed citizen who can't vote but cares.
But I do think, I don't want to speak for everyone, but I think the assessment is who can make my circumstances better the quickest, right? And I think that's what people are going to look. Now, someone like me, I was a political scientist. That's what I have my degree in. I understand that a ton of promises are made on the campaign trails that rarely come to fruition, right? So I probably wouldn't put my whole vote in that. I think there are some issues, more long-term issues, that are a lot more important to me. But I think it's something to consider. Your average layperson is going to look and say, who can make my circumstances better the quickest, right? And so,
yeah. Well, again, probably didn't solve anything, but it was interesting to get your point on this. About. All right. Well, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about another pretty national topic that we've yet to talk about on this show, but a lot of other people are talking about it. So I'm interested to hear your viewpoint. This is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Hello.